Hey, oh, and here we go. I'm Keith.
And I'm Mo.
And I'm Chris. Wait, where'd Brett go? Damn it.
I'm also Brett.
Oh, you're good. Also Brett. Ooh. There you go. Anyways, hey, yo, and here we go. I am Mo, and it is We Talk Comics episode number 40 on the air and in your ear. And this is We Talk Comics Now, name of this episode. Chris is not here this week. We are we get a C-minus this week, but we are going to go ahead anyways, because after all, honestly, who needs him? Guys, who needs him?
Well, I need him, because he mixes things up, balances things out with, you know, two guys that hate everything, two guys that like everything. Brings balance to the force.
There you go. This week, honestly, like I said, I've said before, We Talk Comics is like a hand. Unless you have all the fingers, you can't fully close it to make a fist. So it'll be great to have him back. But this week, we're minus him. Next week, we'll have no vitamin B or vitamin K in our system. So it'll be a different flexing thing again. And then after that, we'll come back with something really special for people. But this week, we're going to get on to, like I said, we're going to be talking, I don't know, probably something that's occurring at Marvel. But first off, guys, what do you say we get to the news?
What's that? Huh?
Brett, Keith, come on, guys. What do you say? The news? Here's the idea. Now, it turns out, I found out about this website. It's been sponsoring our news for the last couple months. But I just found out about it today, called Comicosity.
Nobody told me this.
Comicosity. Turns out, this place that I've been announcing as our sponsor, today I found out it's actually a website. And what it is a place where these two great guys named Brett and Keith write reviews.
Well, also, I'll give them points for that, at least.
And you never heard of it, Brett?
Nope. So far, nope. Nothing.
Keith, sound familiar?
I just leave my reviews in a brown paper bag on a park bench, and I don't know what happens to them after that. That's not my responsibility.
Well, you should check it out, because this site's wicked. This site has reviews by this guy Keith and this guy Brett, turns out. Also, previews, news, articles, interviews. Basically, Comicosity is the top stop for comic book fans on the internet. Personally, myself, I visit on an average about twice a day. But you got to go visit Comicosity, and don't be a geek. Visit them now and proudly be a comic book geek. And now, here we go with the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Now that you remind me, I was just reading this week on Comicosity, the great column, Read Between the Lines, Sam McGuffin, which is a brilliant analysis of Earth 2 and the plot happenings of Issues 2 and now Issue 3 of Earth 2. And by coincidence, I wrote that. So,
really?
Make sure
you wrote
to check that out on Comicosity.
Oh, okay. Well, then, you probably heard of the site. Go ahead. Go on with your damn news. Let's get going.
Now the news with Cub Reporter K, yes.
Okay, lots of DC news happening. People squeaking some stuff out before San Diego Comic-Con. Detective Comics has announced its new team that will start at issue 13. John Layman, who writes Chew, will be joined by Jason Fabok, who recently did the art on the Batman Annual, to be the new team. Tony Daniel leaving that book. Do not let the door hit you on the ass on the way out.
Yeah, I hear people crying all the way from here.
We'll see some more DC annuals in October, continuing storylines that are happening. Action will tell a story that takes place in the five-year gap between Action and Superman. There will be a Batgirl annual, Justice League Dark annual, and a Swamp Thing annual. And speaking of Swamp Thing, there was a strange occurrence this week. Swamp Thing number 11, which was delayed at the printer due to a printing error, was, for a couple of hours, an unannounced digital first on Comixology. It must have been pre-scheduled. It went up on Comixology Wednesday morning and then was down by the afternoon. So a few people got to read it. It will reappear on Comixology when the print copy hits the stands. And because it was Canada Day just a couple of days ago, I had...
What's that?
Canada Day is the day that Canada celebrates its
independence. Well, I'm in Canada.
So not technically independent. It was called Dominion Day up until I believe about the 80s.
Technically, we are the Dominion of Canada. We're not just Canada. Like the United States of America, we're technically the Dominion of Canada.
Can we stop being the Dominion of Canada when we got our own constitution?
Nope.
We're still Dominion of Canada.
Yeah.
Just screech this to a halt while I have a social studies lesson.
And crash and burn. Thank you.
All right, keep moving here. Keep moving. So anyways,
on Twitter, I just tweeted in passing to James Robinson, thanking him for the upcoming Earth 2 character that will be Canadian, still hasn't been announced. And James was nice enough to tweet me back with an inside scoop that the Canadian character will debut in Earth 2 number 5, which is the October issue.
I'm going to send James Robinson a tweet about He-Man.
And I think that this will lead right into the rest of our comic talk for a little bit. The biggest news of the past couple of months in comics. Marvel Now, with an exclamation mark.
Is that the Dominion of Marvel?
It is the Dominion of... It is the Commonwealth. It's a Crown Corporation, I believe.
But seriously, what is it? Where can I go find an article about it so I can read it before we do the show?
Well, there is an article on Comicosity, though.
Comicosity, that place is wicked.
I will say, though, that he refers to it as a relaunch, and they are being... quite specific that it is a relaunch, not a reboot. So, and they're getting, Marvel folk are getting quite angry when you refer to it as a reboot.
Oh, that means, you know what that means? Just to piss them off. That's all I'm going to do now. You know me.
There is no continuity restart tied to this. So that is the big difference.
So it's like Green Lantern.
So it's like Green Lantern, that's right. Or like the New 52 that they announced this time last year, that was only going to be a relaunch and would have no reboot. remember those heady days when they told us that it wasn't going to be a reboot?
Oh, hey, look, I have a new thing I'm doing during the news, whereas when it comes to DC, if I don't have anything nice to say, I'm not saying anything at all. So.
But on the good side... At least with Marvel, they're supposed to be ending the storyline. So unlike Green Lantern, there might be an actual starting on point for people who haven't been reading.
Brett, you've never looked better as your cat's tail takes over your camera.
Cat butt.
Cat butt. All right. There you go. Get yourself a little pussy. Sorry, Keith. I didn't mean to break you up there.
So what is happening?
It reminds me of that Steve Martin joke. Do you guys know that one? The Steve Martin joke? Where he's sitting there and he's like, oh, I went over to this woman's house and we were drinking and I was over there and it was really, really late at night. And then, and let me tell you, this woman had the greatest pussy. She had the most incredible pussy. I mean, this pussy was, it was awesome. It was, and then everybody, oh, I don't think that. And everybody in the audience is booing. He's like, no, don't go dirty. I'm talking about her cat. I'm talking about her cat. Anyways, that cat was the best fuck I ever had. Steve Martin, folks. Not me. Steve Martin.
I like to volunteer with single moms, you know, helping them get their start.
How can you guys not remember that? I believe I remember that because you guys had that in your apartment when you guys used to live together. Taped to the wall, that joke. I think that's where I got that from. I don't think I ever heard him say that. Brett, any memories?
Nope. Got no memories of that.
Moving on.
All right, so... Marvel Now, with an exclamation mark. Marvel Now. Well, it's actually Marvel in October, but technically Marvel Now.
Marvel Now starts in October, yes.
So in October, now.
So in October, well, our show will be called, whatever our number it is, it'll be like, We Talk Comics number 56. We Talk Comics Really Now.
we'll call it Now and Then.
Hey, I like that.
So what's happening is that over the course of 22 weeks, Marvel will be relaunching or creating new titles. There'll be a new number one every week for 22 weeks, so we'll see these all the way through about February, and we've seen the first three. If this is all tied into, as we've talked about a couple of times on the show, Brian Bendis is wrapping up his time at Avengers, Jonathan Hickman is wrapping up his time at Fantastic Four, so we knew a shuffle was coming with these creators to start, and now we're seeing what they're going to be moving on to. The first three titles are Uncanny Avengers, which will spin out directly from AVX.
Shitty name, honestly. Brutal, brutal bad name. Go ahead. I had to get that in there.
Well, I don't really know where the vitriol came from.
This is a terrible name. That's all I'm saying. Nothing else I'm saying wrong, just a bad name.
No, I don't really... When Uncanny X-Men... I can't believe for 30 years you've gone to the shelf and gone, Uncanny X-Men! What a horrible name! So I don't really know what's wrong with Uncanny Avengers.
Because the X-Men are uncanny, the Avengers are assembling. Anyways...
Well, you've gotten really to the core of the point of the book, though. It is a team that is composed of both X-Men members and Avengers members.
Oh, okay. I understand.
It'll be falling
out of AVX, I guess, right?
Yes, actually. Launching right out of AVX. And Rick Remender writing, and John Cassidy on art, which it's been a while since we've seen him on a regular book.
I like Cassidy's art a lot. Always have.
Indeed, me too. And the next one is probably the most controversial. All New X-Men by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Stuart Immonen, which is...
Brett, did he say that right?
Sounds right to me.
I think within one of my three tries there was probably right.
Yes.
Edit it together so it's proper, Brett.
Perhaps a little slow, but so be it.
We are talking about Keith.
There's no note on his name that says the proper speed to say his name.
Well, that wasn't Keith. That was you as Chris, mispronouncing that name there.
That's right. Stuart Imhotep.
And what's your email there, Keith? Anyways, go on.
Chris said we talk.
Now, All New X-Men is possibly the wackiest idea out of the bunch of that we're seeing. All New X-Men will be the original five X-Men displaced in time.
All right.
To the modern day. So, Cyclops, Marvel Girl, Iceman, Beast, Angel, displaced to modern times, shocked out of time. How will they adjust to
what
today's world?
What happens to the current continuities, Cyclops, and I guess Marvel Girl, obviously not an issue, but what happens to the...
They'll still be kicking around.
So you're going to have both versions?
Yeah, so a couple of... if you're a fan of Legion of Superheroes, a couple of us have already taken to referring to them as the SW6 X-Men.
Okay.
From the storyline Legion of Superheroes had, where they had the young clones that were hanging around at the same time as the adult Legion.
Clones in comic books, always an excellent, excellent plan.
So, I mean, given Marvel's, you know, 5 to 10 year rolling timeline, I'm very curious how they deal with these characters and what actual place they're from.
One of the things that I'm curious about then is are these characters then going to be the personality of the characters in that season one that we saw? Because, for instance, I thought Jean Grey was particularly unlikable and different in that book. So, is it going to be that take? Because I think that'll be a fail.
Very interesting. Yeah, I don't know what... Because, season one was retelling those characters... supposedly in continuity, and now we're going to get... And presumably these are alternate past characters now. They won't have memories of the present day.
I actually think that's an interesting concept for a book, though. So many... creatively, there is an awful lot of stuff you can do with the idea of Scott Summers meeting Scott Summers and Jean Grey finding out that she's dead in the future. And I think there's a lot you can do. If they had wiped out the current ones and were just bringing these guys forward... I wouldn't like it, but the idea that you can have them interacting, and I think there's some interesting stuff that can be done there.
Yeah, the Beast says, "What do you mean I'm fuzzy?"
Yeah, it's true though. It's true. I think there could be some. You know, are they going to mentor them? Are they going to be jealous of them? Are they going to? You know, there's a lot of stuff there that I think they could do with that. A lot of interesting storylines that can be told.
Iceman says, "Woo! I hooked up with Lorna Dane. High five."
He actually would say that. That's the part about that's funny. Is that's not a joke. That's what he would actually say.
I'm trying to imagine these poor teenagers who are from 2004 trying to adjust to our incredibly scary world of tomorrow.
Oh, I know. Like, they'll be like, an iPhone? All I got is an iPod.
That's right.
My iPad is thicker than yours.
That's what she said.
That's extra creepy, then.
Yes.
And the last of these, first announcements is that Jonathan Hickman will be taking on Avengers and New Avengers. So Avengers will be a bi-weekly book, which will have a roster of somewhere around 18 heroes that will cycle through. And he will be tying New Avengers in to basically have three issues a month to play with.
Yeah, so Avengers will be coming out, what, daily, pretty much at that point?
We don't know what's ending
so
and what's restarting.
Peter Bagley, did you say Peter Bagley's drawing it?
I absolutely didn't say that.
Okay.
Mark Bagley?
Oh, Mark Bagley. What did I say? Peter Bagley? Yeah, he couldn't. No, he wouldn't draw that.
Didn't say that either. never mentioned an artist at all.
He's quick. That's all I'm saying. That was the point I was trying to get to. I fucked it up, but he's quick. That's what I was getting to. I've been doing too much We Talk Comedy, or We Talk, talking too much of Mulvey lately. I'm cursing a lot. Anyways, let's go. What were you saying, Keith? I'm sorry, were you doing the news?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't paying that close attention. So the other things that they've said from this relaunch.
You said that before. That's why you re-listen. That's why
that's
you
right.
listen back, so you could hear what it is we were talking about. You're really not like paying attention during the show.
I like to be as surprised as everybody else.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Avengers? I don't like Jonathan Hickman. What do you guys think? Avengers, three books a month, Jonathan Hickman.
Well, I'm interested. I like Jonathan Hickman. So, from what I understand, he has at least like 63 issues plotted of it already or something like that. So, I think that it should be a monstrous storyline, and hopefully he brings more to it than Bendis was at the end of it.
Okay, what were the name of the books he's writing again?
Avengers and New Avengers.
I thought you said there was three.
Yes, Avengers will be bi-weekly. So
okay, that's right. Yeah, that's right. What do I think, honestly? He doesn't work for me. As a writer, I'm kind of like Keith. I haven't read anything by him that I've really ever enjoyed. That said, I know, A, he's very talented. Just because his style doesn't work for me doesn't mean I'm going to say he's not a good writer. He's just not a writer that I gravitate towards. He's very good. And B, he's been very successful and very good for the Fantastic Four. So Bendis was good for a long time on Avengers for them. But having Hickman take over, who's kind of one of the it guys in comic books right now, and a talented creator, having him take that over from Bendis, to me, continues the momentum Bendis started, and maybe we'll take it to a new level. It's probably a good thing. It's probably a good choice. It doesn't mean I'll personally read it, but it's a good move for them, and I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to slam the guy. Just I know he's good. I can tell he's good when I've read him. His style doesn't work for me. That's all. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I really like Manhattan Projects, but I wasn't much for Fantastic Four. There are those writers that I don't necessarily like their superhero stuff, but I like their other non-superhero work. There's quite a few writers like that, actually, and I think Hickman's falling into that. Manhattan Projects, I really, really... Yeah, Morrison being the prime example for me, yes.
Top of the heap.
I mean, the one thing I really like the idea of a starting point on Avengers, because I've found it impenetrable for years. When I started reading comics again a couple of years ago, there was no possible place to start for it. Go back and read Disassembled wasn't the best advice. Go back and read these 800 comics and you'll be right caught up to date.
We said many times, only read the core comic. That was it. That was the advice. Only read the core comic and Iron Man if you wanted to read something else that was pretty good going on at the time.
So I'm interested in jumping on. I am interested in the idea that this may be a more cosmic-centered book. Get out of some of that street-level stuff. Get out of the sitting around the room talking stuff that Bendis has been doing quite a bit of. And, get into some real Kree and Skrull War kind of level stuff. Get off Earth and see where this team can go.
Or what do you think?
Like I say, I really like Hickman, and so I think that he brings a different type of writing than Bendis did. Like, Bendis was very gritty and street level, and Hickman is completely, you know, cosmic and intelligent and just, you know, physicistic. there's my new word for the day, but you know, he just brings a different tone.
I didn't know he was a physicist.
No, but he writes like he could be a physicist.
I think he's the smartest guy that doesn't know where polar bears are from.
But at any rate, I look forward to...
A reference I did not get at all, Keith, but you're going to have to explain it to me. Sorry, Brett. What the hell are you talking about?
It's in one of Hickman's AVX issues that Wolverine kills a polar bear in the Antarctica to keep himself warm.
Oh, good Lord.
I assume it was there for a Coke commercial, but... Hanging out with the penguin.
What the hell's that thing that I guess there's no, what do you call them, that tom-toms around or whatever the hell from... He's like, you gotta put a tom... Oh, they're not here. Polar bear! That'll do.
And I thought Antarctic polar bears smelled bad on the outside. Maybe it was from the Savage Land. I mean, it's the Marvel Universe.
That's right.
The Celestials planted one polar bear there.
And, wow. Well, you know what? They're like,
still,
you know,
hanging out.
Yeah, you're going to be useful in 2,000 years.
Those Celestials plan ahead.
Brett, damn it, get to your point, Brett. What were you saying about Hickman? Quit stalling.
That he doesn't know where a polar bear... No, I'm excited for it. I like Hickman, and so does Chris. But I like the idea that he really gets a chance to kind of start from a fresh point, because even on Fantastic Four, he really didn't get a chance to start from a fresh point. He was, when he started up, I mean, he moved into his own stories, but he started out front with other people's stories already in place. So, you know, I look forward to that, and I hope it's good.
And he did seem to me, from what I was getting about him, it didn't seem to me like he was... Is he wrapping up on Fantastic Four because he wants to, or because they're telling him it's time to move on to this other project? Seemed to me like he could have written them for 5-10 more years, and he had the plot lines in place to do so.
Yeah, I would suggest that he absolutely does probably have a lot more plot lines, but that is one of the things that Marvel is doing in this case, is they're making a concerted effort to take creators off of the books that they're on and shift them over to something else to try to get, you know, to try to invigorate the line.
And what was it on Twitter that you're saying, Keith? Or actually, you looked like you had a comment on that, Keith. No? Did I read into it?
I don't know. I don't know too much about Hickman, but I mean, I don't know if he necessarily did have a lot of stuff planned after. I know that when he started Fantastic Four, he had a long arc planned, but most of that he's kind of checked off. So, I mean, without his notepad, I don't think we really know.
Yeah, there's that. It just strikes me that based on the type of person that I think and that we somewhat know that he is, that he probably has more plotted. Whether he ever needs to use it or not is not the point.
I'll never forget Eric Larson. He was working for... Oh, nice kitty. Eric Larson was working for doing Savage Dragon there, and it's time to come back to Marvel. So he made a pitch to write The Incredible Hulk. And for some reason or another, they decided to go John Byrne writing Incredible Hulk, and they were relaunching that series in number one. But they gave him Wolverine. He went, Wolverine, perfect. The storyline I had for The Incredible Hulk works perfect with Wolverine, too. And just changed the name, slotted it in, and went forward. And who knows, maybe Hickman can do some of that. Of course, that storyline sucked. But still, maybe Hickman can do some of that. No response?
As long as we don't end up with a pocket universe with 1,000 variations of Hank Pym that work together for shared purpose, then we're probably okay.
Dude, I'm so there. No, not of Hank Pym. Maybe if you had said Hawkeye, but not Hank Pym. Anyways.
there's a brain trust. Every possible variation of Hawkeye in a room.
And how many of them does it take to change a light bulb? Anyways.
Dude, I hooked up with the Black Widow. High five.
High five. Nice. Oh, Mockingbird. I miss you. She's back, though, right? Anyways.
She's still dead, isn't she?
I don't know.
I'm reasonably sure she's still dead.
No, you can't be reasonably sure that anybody who died is still dead. There is no way to verify in comic books that that's true. But anyways, moving on. Let's actually talk about the big picture here. First off, what is kind of the community on Twitter and the comic book community's reaction to Marvel now, Keith?
It couldn't be more mixed from what I'm seeing. Certainly, if you had asked people a week ago, there wouldn't have been any strong demand for a reboot that being accepted. Now that it's not a reboot, they're like, well, it's not even a reboot. Why are you even bothering? The DC fans are quite cynical. A lot of Marvel hate the last couple of days I've seen on my Twitter feed, particularly from DC fans, who I guess got roughed up last year when the New 52 was going to happen. So they've stored up the angst.
So explain that to me a little bit. What do you mean they're saying? What's kind of what are the DC 52 fans saying?
It's a general cynicism. A lot of it's copying New 52. They don't think the ideas are new enough. That it's what's the difference between a reboot and a relaunch, which I actually don't think is a really hard question.
Besides, this is a reboot, not a relaunch. Or wait.
they are not dumping previous continuity. So to me, unless someone wants to provide me a different definition, that's pretty much the only thing you need to make it a reboot. It's you have to dump previous continuity.
Amazing, it's like Batman.
The Amazing Spider-Man movie is a reboot. Well, Batman dumped two Robins. That's fairly significant.
Oh, okay. All right.
And Thomas Wayne killed Kennedy or something. There's a lot of stuff happening in Batman.
That was on the way to happening regardless, though. You have to admit. That was on its way to happening regardless. But, yeah. It is kind of, as a person who was a DC fan who is no longer reading the product, personally, I don't have any cynicism towards this because my issue is with the publisher's concepts and with doing it poorly. If Marvel can see the issues that a reboot or relaunch or whatever you want to call it that DC had, learn from it and do it better, I have no issue with it personally. I mean, it's all about the quality for me. The quality wasn't there, which was part of my problem. And then the quality to me, I came back to the reboot of the New 52 as a fan of DC because the quality didn't match up to the concepts and it didn't seem to have a plan to seem thrown together. This may have more of a plan. It certainly seems to have more of a plan. I remember when we talked to Joe Mulvey, he's asked us if we thought that this was leading, this AVX was leading into a relaunch, and neither of us at the time did, and now, of course, it does appear to be. But, I mean,
that's not at all what we talked about with Mulvey. He asked if it was leading to a reboot.
That's true. It's not leading to a reboot.
You were really leading to where I was wrong there. That, you should have known that that was the wrong path to wander down.
That you were wrong?
Exactly. Of course
he was wrong.
I predicted exactly that.
Let's just say he's probably not going to listen to this. Let's just say Joel Mulvey was wrong. Let's just cut it off at that. That'll make me feel better. The point is, though, that as a person who... I'm not going to be cynical that somebody else is doing what DC did, even though I'm not going to be sitting there going, well, DC already screwed me, now these guys are going to do the same. That's not my attitude. My attitude is, okay, now these guys, hopefully they can do it right. That's my only attitude on it, personally, as one of the people. I'm not cynical on this, personally. I'm not angry. I think, actually, this is something DC or Marvel needed to do in a lot of ways. And they have tried to do some things like this before in the past. Even Heroes Reborn could be considered something like this. They did relaunch issue number one, Ultimate. There can be a happy medium between a relaunch and current continuity, and perhaps a reboot's exactly what we're going to see there. My opinion. Brett, yours.
For me, the biggest thing about this that they're doing that they didn't do before is they're making it company-wide. So it's not going to just be like the Avengers core titles that hit the new number ones and stuff like that. It's going to be everything. And I think that's great. I mean, I'm really excited about this because when I did go back, starting from Avengers Disassembled, and try to reread, you know, and read, in many cases, the Marvel Universe to catch up, I was still confused in elements, and I wound up hitting a point where I just couldn't continue because the quality just wasn't there in a lot of cases on some of the books. But the lack of quality on some books took away from the books that had quality. So I really hope that by doing this and by kind of tightening everything up, that they will avoid DC's, you know, editorial mishaps from the new 52 and actually make a really tight, cohesive universe again that makes complete sense, you know, for at least 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Before it falls out of...
But that would be 6 months more than I think we got from the other guys. And, you know, I something like X-Men, I always enjoyed X-Men when I read it, and I'm familiar with the characters, I'm familiar with what's happened, but I've never read it continually because, honestly, I've found the X-Men in many ways intimidating to jump on since probably the early 90s.
Oh, and it's intimidating as hell to jump on to.
And this is a chance to fix that.
Yeah, you can't jump on and read for any length of time and know everything, referring to things that are months and years back in continuity.
Exactly. And, you know, people could have said the same thing about Green Lantern, and they did, but then when they relaunched it, they didn't. And that's kind of like, and then they did with Superman, and like I said, I didn't like the direction of the characters. That was my issues, the company philosophies, that type of thing. We'll see if this works. I mean, this could very well work. I'm willing to give Marvel the benefit of the doubt. Keith, what's your reactions to me and Brett?
Well, I think there are people with a more positive attitude that I've been seeing. One of the problems, certainly, of what I'm seeing on Twitter is, if you're going to be cynical and negative, there's 100 cynical and negative things you can say. That sounds interesting. I will try it. Is kind of the end of the positive things to say. So there's one tweet that says that, and then 100 from someone else that wants to get into niggling things. I'm interested to try them out. I mean, certainly I was interested in Schism last fall because I was looking for a way into these books. I was looking for a point at which, okay, as long as I understand what's happening here, that's where I can start from.
And that certainly works. Certainly, in order for us to review and talk about them and to integrate people into them, I think it's much easier to say, perhaps it's not financially as successful to say, we're going to launch one book a week for 22 weeks, or what it was that you said? Was that the plan?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, as launching 52 over the course of 4 weeks. But I know that I also think that's a much smarter plan. That's one of the issues that DC did wrong. It was too much too quick. They couldn't control the quality that I felt and the continuity and the different things already. I mean,
I'd absolutely agree with that. What we're seeing, looking at the negativity, it's so specific, and I realized as I was looking through it, it's so specific because we're only talking about 3 books. We don't know what's coming next. We don't know. The fourth book that gets announced may be a new female character. The fourth book might be She-Hulk finally getting a title again. The fourth book may be a completely new character. Franklin Richards may be grown up. He could be a teenager, have his own team.
And that could piss people off.
The crazy thing
is, it did before. Maybe this time it won't suck, though.
Maybe these three titles are a little... two of these three titles are really safe.
Yeah.
You know, the Bendis one is wacky. I'm not sure about the Bendis one. Bendis fan, but, you know, it's wacky. The other two are super safe. There's safety rails on these other two books. So that's part of it is, I mean, with New 52, we had 52 books to be cynical about. It really waters it down. It was difficult to focus on one thing to complain about when you saw those solicits.
Not for me.
So much chaos.
No, I was just kidding. Not for me. I was just kidding because if you do go back to episode one, you'll listen and you'll hear me say I was curious and I didn't think it was necessarily a bad move. Like I say, 52 fell apart for me when the quality wasn't good, not the concept. I'm done with DC because of it. But Marvel now, I don't expect to be done with this. I have a better feeling about this. It feels better in my gut.
Well, and certainly we've seen some stuff just recently on the planning of the 52 was definitely not what it should have been. You know, George Perez just had an interview a couple of weeks ago, where he said that one of his frustrations with Superman was that he didn't know that Action Comics was going to take place 5 years ago, and no one was telling him what was going to happen in Action Comics.
Yeah, so that's awful.
You're creating the modern version of a character that you don't know his origin.
Yeah, that's awful.
He doesn't know what's supposed to be in, like, happen between those two books.
Because so, if he had known the origins, he could have put in more word bubbles talking about it.
Exactly. Well, he could have actually focused on the character, and that was my big problem. Yeah. I mean, my big problem was not only was it a super dense book, but I didn't have any sense of that character, and, you know, now in hindsight, neither did the writer. That's why I didn't have
it. Yeah, exactly. You can't blame him for that. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the Bendis one. You say you're uncomfortable with it. What are the complaints people are giving, or you're not sure about it is probably the right words you said. What is the complaints more specifically, that people are putting out there in the comic book reading world, on Twitter and such?
I think going back to the well again of characters that the three of us are too young to have had any real attachment to, aside from, I mean, your first reaction was my first reaction, so it's X-Factor. I mean, that's how I know these characters. I mean, I only know these five characters together because of X-Factor. And, you know, I'm 108 years old. I don't really know who this is supposed to be for. It's a problem I do have with some of the DC stuff, is it's nostalgia for, you know, I mean, I expect that Paul O'Connor will love that they're going back to this form of the team.
Shout out to the Long Box Graveyard.
But I don't really know who that's supposed to be for. I have no nostalgia for a version of the team that was, you know, broke up when I was a year old. So maybe they can. I don't know how long you play out the people out of time when they're only out of time, Marvel time. So they're from like 2002, 2004. That's not really, you know, it's not Encino Man at that point. It's, you know, they're shocked that our computers are slightly smaller than they were.
You know, I just want to say, first off, I just want to say, I'm not 108 years old, I'm young myself, dudes, yo, and see, I'm cool and hip and young.
Dude. 108 is Keith's Twitter age.
Ah, okay. That's actually how many tweets he did today. But 108, see, there you go.
Ballpark.
What's that?
Ballpark, yeah.
In ballpark, yeah. There you go.
Still early. Day's not over.
All right. Keith, Brett, what do you kind of think? What's your thoughts on it? You already heard mine that there's some interesting concepts. And by the way, Keith, when you talk about how we don't know those characters when they're young, I think you'll probably find that you're much more familiar with them than you know, because the opportunity to read reprints, to see origins in comic books, cartoons, movies, just people talking about the past events, I think you might find that you are more familiar with them at that age than you realize.
I'd say the oddity, though, is that this is never the team that's used in the comics, in the cartoons or in the movies, because you want Wolverine on the team whenever you're doing a new version.
That's true. I won't disagree with that. It's not the exact team, but I mean the personalities and kind of the dynamics, the general dynamics. I think you might be more familiar with than you know. I certainly remember reading reprints of early X-Men issues myself because there used to be, what was it, Marvel Age, I think something like that, was the book that was reprinting X-Men.
They had, like, Amazing Adventures featuring the X-Men, I think it was.
Yeah, or stuff like that. Yeah, so. Brett, go ahead. Your specific thoughts on this.
Well, that actually, I'm just going to digress for a second, because that leads me to a very embarrassing story. Back when I was very these Amazing Adventures featuring the X-Men, didn't really look at it, but it was number 13, and I just remember looking at this book and thinking, holy crap, this is the X-Men number 13, and I was all like googly-eyed, and I went into the comic book store, and I'm like, how much is this worth? And they're like, nothing. It's Amazing Adventures featuring the X-Men. And I'm like, oh.
And dude, I thought my Marvel Tales books were going to make... I thought if I could flip those bad boys.
I never went into a store, but I didn't realize for the longest time my Marvel Tales, those were the ones reprinting Spider-Man. I didn't realize for the longest time that those weren't actually the originals. Until I was reading the letter pages and they were referring to something that happened 4 issues ago, and it was like number 37, and my book on the front went number like 123, and I was like, this doesn't match up. Something's going on. Oh!
Yeah. That's one of those early lessons in comic collecting.
Young and
right
stupid.
There.
Yeah. Now I'm just stupid. Anyways.
Now you're old and stupid. Yep, there you go.
What are you talking about, dude? I'm not old. Yo, brother. Anyways.
Wait, I got some comic books in his house.
Yeah. That's right.
West Side, yeah.
I have a standing rule. If I know what this slang means, no one's saying it anymore.
That's right.
I am the best.
It's on like Donkey Kong. Right. It's on like Donkey Kong. That's coming back because I just said it.
Brett. Setting.
Yeah, damn right. Brett, damn it, get to the point. What are you going to say about this book?
I'm really up and down about the book. I think that I hope that what the interviews segments that I read are right, because they said that Bendis is really excited and he's really just itching to get writing these characters, and because I want Bendis to get back to where he used to be.
Yeah, there because was some great Bendis stuff.
Yeah, like when he started out and disassembled and stuff like that, it's fantastic. The stuff that he was able to do to the team, it was great. And now the problem is that it just feels like he doesn't have any love of the characters. He's just been doing it for too long, in the case of the Avengers. So I hope that this is one of those books. Yeah,
it was like it became a job to him. I think that's probably a good
And I really hope that this book gets him out of that. I mean, I don't know what to think about you know what time they're being pulled from. So that part scares me. Totally agree with you that there's lots of interesting stories. They brought up in these interviews the concept of Jean Grey realizing that she's dead. You know, and absolutely, I'm sure that they're going to deal with that.
Or how about the concept of Scott Summers in the future being the woman he loved being around again, but also the younger, same Scott Summers being in love with her? What's his conflict there? The woman that he, you know... That's interesting as well. Like, there's so much you can do.
Yeah, and I like what you can do with it. So I think that it's really going to come down to where they go with it, and whether or not Bendis can regain the form that made him Marvel's top guy.
Hey, can Scott Summers from the past and Scott Summers from the future touch? Or is that like the world goes boom and we have another reboot?
Ooh, yeah, there you go. That's the way that they can actually reboot.
We're out of it. So yeah, they have a reboot.
In like 6 months, bam.
We'll reboot with a reboom.
The Summers X equation.
I like it. Brett, book it. If they use that, we get money.
That's right.
Like we need another Summers. Oh, my God. We'll have two Scott Summers, and we haven't even... we've got to collect up all his kids. The family reunions are incredibly awkward in this family.
Oh, I know.
You got two versions of Havoc.
You got Corsair.
I love Corsair.
Cable turns up and it's always awkward.
When's the last time he showed up in the... What is it? What's the name of his group out in space there that he was with?
Starjammers.
Starjammers.
I haven't seen Corsair.
That's because I believe that he was killed.
Was he?
Currently dead. Listed as currently dead.
Well, yeah, but again, you can't verify anybody's dead. It's like, all right. Anything else you guys want to say about Marvel Now?
Now, I just want to talk about a couple of the other changes that are coming with Marvel Now. Some of them cosmetic, some of them content. The Marvel AR app, which is the iPad app that I still can't use because my phone is not new enough, will be used on more comics coming up, and there'll be other digital content that they're teasing. We're expecting that probably by that point all of their books will have the included digital copy, which is either included in the price or is free, depending on the way you see it. And cover designs, which is kind of the most interesting thing to me. And Mo, you just said you saw the Uncanny Avengers cover. The this is one of the more interesting things for me, because what they're doing is the current cover design that is used on magazines, used on comics, with about, you know, a quarter or a third of the top of the page used for the logoing and the trade dress, etc. They're approaching this and realizing that most comics now aren't displayed that way. They're displayed on a shelf where you see the full cover on the new comic rack. So why do they still look like this? Why do they still have the title at the top of the book? And the Uncanny Avengers book cover that we've already seen plays with this. But they're going to be looking into this going forward, that redesigning the way the covers look, they don't have to look the same all the time, but moving away from this standard thing that we've had for the entire history of comics.
See, I don't mind that, but I don't like this. I don't like what they've done with this Uncanny Avengers number one, because quite frankly, I think it's too much. I think you should be able to look at the book and know the title immediately. I think I look at this and I go, I have to work, turn my head to the left, read Uncanny, turn my head to the right to read Avengers. That's too much work. It's so it should still, whatever they do, it should still pop out at you quickly and be accessible and understandable to somebody who has never seen a Marvel comic book before.
See, I mean, I don't agree with that, because to me the cover pops. Like, if I
it's not readable.
Well, if I see this on the shelf, I want to put in the extra time that it takes to go, you know, right to left, left to right, whatever. You know, it's like I don't have a problem with you know, not having to tilt my head to the side to still read it. And I think it's a really nice cover. I love the fact that they're willing to let the artists, though, make the call.
I think one of the things that bugs me is that Uncanny starts in the bottom left and Avengers starts in the bottom right, or top right. So you're reading in opposite directions. Like I say, Brent, I think you have to look at it from the perspective of somebody who isn't a comic book fan. You're a comic book fan, so you're going to look at a cover like this and say immediately, oh, I'm a comic book fan and I want to know about this. That's kind of cool. I think it needs to come from the people, oh, this person isn't a comic book fan, you're trying to draw them in, do they understand what they're seeing right away and go, I want to read it? I'm not sure that this particular cover does that. Keith, why don't you be the tiebreaker here? I think we both present good points. I don't know if either one of us is wrong. I just know I'm right.
I'm split down the middle. How about that? That's where usually there's four of us and we can always have a tie. With three of us, I'm forced to have to make a decision.
We never do. It's always you three against me.
That happens a lot, yeah. I like the idea of playing with this. I mean, we've talked about Watchmen so much. Watchmen didn't have title at the top of the page because it was a direct sales comic. When this came out that they were going to look at cover design as a flexible thing, it made absolute sense to me, and I suddenly... There's a story I often tell of a woman gets married, she's going to make a ham for her husband for the first time, and her husband says, cut the ends off the ham because that's the way Mom always cooked it. So she calls up the guy's mother and says, why'd you cut the ends off the ham? She said, well, that's the way my mother did it. They call up Grandma, and Grandma says, well, the pot was only yay big, and that's why you had to cut the ends off. You do these things for so long because it's the way you've always done them. There is no good reason for covers to be the design they are. And we can play with this now. And yeah, I really applaud, you know, trying something new.
I kind of disagree with that. You're not 100% wrong. I mean, I wouldn't say there isn't no good reason why the covers are the way they are, because it is easy and accessible and quick, and like I say, it's attractive to new readers. And I'm not saying what they're doing here is wrong. I'm saying this particular cover, I think, is not quite the right look yet. I think that they just need to be careful, like I say, and how they present it to new readers as well. But, because it's very easy for comic books to sit in a small world and be happy there. And this concept, to me, can actually bring more people in, because it is inventive. It doesn't, like you say... It's not bad to think outside the box, but I think when you do, you can't... it's okay to think outside the box, but don't have to shatter the box at the same time. Does that make any sense? No.
You have to remember there is a box?
That's what I meant.
I think
that's what I meant.
My only thing about the new reader element is that, yes, they want new readers, but I think that if you're a new reader, you don't necessarily have the expectation of the title being in the top third to begin with. So wherever it is,
and I agree with that, Brett, which is what I'm saying, that I don't think it's a bad thing. Like I say, just that this particular one, to me, I think is not executed with that in mind, though. You can do both. You can look to appeal to the new readers, knowing that they aren't having this expectation, while still keeping in mind that a new reader needs to be attracted to it. And I'm just not sure this one does.
What's going on with Havok's mask on that one?
Well, it's weird because he doesn't have the raised parts, and so it actually looks.
Well, that's
kind
better.
Of strange.
No, the raised parts was lame. That was lame. It's good to get rid of that.
It's always been a design element that varied so heavily from artist to artist. I can't really figure out what it's supposed to be on. It's a bit old.
I guess I'm not like you said. I'm not reading AVX. I'm not sure what's up with Wanda, but Scarlet Witch is back in the good guys' side here again, or what's going on? I guess it's a relaunch or a reboot, so it doesn't matter. What the hell is it again?
Not a reboot. So yes, it does matter.
Okay, there you go.
And I am reading AVX, and I don't know what the hell is going on with Scarlet Witch. So you're I wouldn't worry too much about that.
There you go. All right, what else was it you wanted to get us to hit there, Keith?
I think we should take a look at this this Marvel Now promo image that was in Entertainment Weekly. So there's about 14 characters on it.
Entertainment Weekly, what an interesting place, by the way, for them to announce. What do you guys think? Isn't that that's not where I would have thought they would do it. So I just think I think it's a good idea. I just would that's not what I would have expected. What do you guys think?
Is it owned by Disney?
No, it's owned by Time Warner, actually.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first thought, too, and it's a Time Warner company. I like that Marvel has made a concerted effort to make these announcements in non-conventional comic places. You know, the same way the Astonishing X-Men announcement was done on The View. They're getting to new people. I mean, this story was going to get to anyone that's interested in comics anyway, so why not put it somewhere that will get people that aren't?
Well, it makes sense that they shouldn't say our events are for comic book fans. They should say our events are we have an entertainment product. We're a big deal, mm-hmm. and mainstream entertainment companies will carry us because we're a big deal. That's where we're going to announce it. I think that's a very very smart move. I like that a lot.
Well, the thing is that the Avengers movie was so huge that it's given them so much more leeway to go to mainstream media outlets to announce news, especially when it has to do with the Avengers. Yeah. You know, you can go anywhere with the Avengers now.
That's right. This isn't something just for people who are, you know, those people who still live at home in their mother's basement reading comic books. That's an image that isn't real. I mean, not, those people don't exist, but that's
no. I mean,
not,
Keith still is with us, you know. So I mean,
yeah, that's right. But
own basement. Thank you very much.
but that is an image that still exists out there to a lot of people. When we talk about the convention that we went to in Calgary, there's a certain image just in many people's mind that they still have of what those people there are like. And by doing this, I think that you help to break away from that image to some degree. It's subtle, but I think it's a good thing, and I think it helps. Anyways, Keith, I got off on a tangent there because you mentioned that. And go ahead with what your announcement was, or what you wanted to talk about was.
Well, I'm just curious reactions on some of these outfits. I think the most important thing to draw from this Marvel Now image is front and center Rocket Raccoon. And, you know, stop the presses. Rocket Raccoon is getting a big place in the Marvel Universe coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not interested Guardians in anything else going on with Marvel Now. Screw it. I don't care about anything except what's the deal with Rocket Raccoon?
Does he get his own regular series?
Now I have to Google Rocket Raccoon.
See, this right now, this is what I miss, Chris.
That's right.
He'll own the hardcover, he'll own the softcover, he'll own the originals.
I thought that was Star Fox from N64. I didn't realize.
Star Fox is a total rip-off of Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I can see this now on Google. 1976? Man, actually, yeah. I'm going to have to find that miniseries. That'll be in a four for a dollar sometime.
Not for long, at the rate this is going.
Yeah.
Yep. What is... Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That is interesting, though. Yeah. I don't know. That's obviously not the biggest thing, but it is interesting. I mean, the biggest thing to me is it looks like they are officially getting rid of the Nick Fury we all know and love for the Nick Fury that we love in Ultimate Avengers, the Samuel L. Jackson one. I don't like that. Like I said, I think there's a place for both. And
that would
I don't
be,
like...
What you're looking at there would be... Well, it's either those two figures, the Captain America and the Nick Fury, are teasing that they're going to be doing something in Marvel now with the Ultimate Universe as well, doing a revamp, or that's Nick Fury Jr., one of the two. The more I think about it, the more I think that maybe that's a tease that something's happening with the Ultimate Universe as well, because that cover we saw for Uncanny Avengers doesn't have a uniform for Captain America like that.
That's true.
Because there's another guy in an eye patch there, but I thought that was Cable.
That is Cable, yeah.
That is Cable.
Yeah, so, that's what I thought. So, yeah. Yeah, Nick Fury Jr., I wouldn't mind that then. That's fine. As long as it's, but not, yeah. I mean, yeah, you're probably right. Does this mean the end of the Ultimate Universe? Does this mean an integration? Is the Spider-Man miniseries a prelude to that as well? And they're going to tie that in, the ending. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that, like I say, Marvel could go with here. I wonder if the Fantastic Four outfits now are going to be all white.
Well, they have been with the Future Foundation in that regard, so that's not a huge stretch.
Cyclops is new, obviously. All red. I think it's a really good design. I think it looks really cool, except for I thought it was Daredevil at first. Other than that, until I saw the X, but I think he looks cool. The Iron Man armor, I think, looks really, really cool with the black. And we've seen some black in Iron Man before, so I have no issues with that.
I like Nova.
It doesn't look very different.
No, but the black
looks shiny.
It looks shiny. It doesn't look all that different. I'm pretty sure he had, in his 90s mini or series, I'm pretty sure he had a shiny cover. So,
I'll guarantee it.
Because it was the 90s, I guarantee it. It's a gimmick cover. What is that on the Hulk's elbows? Is that stupid? The Hulk's uniform, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Armor on
Hulk. That looks stupid. That's dumb. I don't like that. But most of this, I think, looks pretty cool.
And if you look just to Marvel Girl's right there, there is it a helmet? Is it a little ship? It's got the shield symbol on it.
Huh.
Yeah, there's
a lot of curiousness.
Don't know. It's not attached to a body. It looks kind of like a helmet, but it's kind of floating there. So, yeah, there's some speculation of what that is. My guess.
This is a Quesada piece, right?
It is. Yeah.
Your guess is that it's Skeets.
You think it's Skeets? Okay. New 52.
That would rule if it was Skeets.
The New 52 is so rebooted that they actually loaned out a character to the Marvel's relaunch.
That wouldn't surprise me. But anyways, what were you? It is.
What do you think, Mo? What do you think of that?
Of what?
The little thingy, whatever that thingy is.
Like I say, for me, my thought is Machine Man thing. I mean, again, I'm trying to just look at this though and go, who's missing? Like, and maybe
That's where I was coming from, because I think. Little ship for Ant-Man is my thought. Ant-Man would be the one film property that's not represented on here. We got Spider-Man, we got the X-Men.
That's true. Hulk, if you're looking at it from a film property, Nova isn't in a film property though, is he?
Presumably he and Rocket Raccoon would be in the Guardians of the Galaxy film.
That's true, I suppose, yeah. Because, I mean, I'm looking at it, and you're right, but I'm looking at it from who's not represented that's a bigger star than within their universe than Ant-Man. Because Ant-Man, maybe, I still think of him as that big a star. I mean, Doctor Strange, I would say, is a bigger star within the Marvel Universe than
Remember,
Ant-Man.
This piece was created for Entertainment Week.
That's true.
So,
where's Cable in the movies?
Absolutely nowhere. So that is out of place for my theory. That I don't. There's no reason for Cable.
Like, see, Doctor Strange. Maybe it's some version of Doctor Strange in the future. Who knows? Like, he's the. Who else is a? Is there any other big stars that's missing? I mean, obviously you have somebody like the Thing, but because you have Invisible Woman, that's not really an issue, right? So, is there anybody else that you guys can think of who's like a massive star that Daredevil isn't on there? That one to me is strange.
Daredevil and Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider being the other film property that's not there.
That's right, yeah. That's right. Well, anyways, what do you guys think of the Cyclops? Like I say, I like it. I think it's just a cool look. It's basically the exact same, but got rid of the black and he's all red. It matches the goggles. What do you guys think of that?
I'm very interested to find out how he got possessed by Starro.
Yeah, one of us was going
to
do it.
Looks like he's got a star on his face.
Perhaps that's just...
New 52!
Maybe that's just that the artist isn't very good. Or maybe he did in a hurry. I don't know.
He
could be good. He could be good at times.
I just don't like the look of it. It looks really strange. Like, it tends... He looks like some sort of cheesily concocted supervillain from the 80s.
Nah, I don't know. I like it. Was it the stealth armor that almost looked like that Iron Man had?
Yeah, a little bit like that, but
yeah. Yeah, what do you guys like the Iron Man? It looks like he's dumped the red.
Yeah, I'm not sold on the yellow, but in that
I like
regard, the
Iron,
black and yellow.
I like the Iron Man. I think the Hulk is the only one I really don't like. I'm not much for the Cyclops movie, but
I like the Iron Man except for the red lights. And one of them is fine, but five of them. Kind of a little stupid, but yeah. Spider-Man really
went into other Iron Man voice line.
Spider-Man, I guess they're not going back to the black outfit permanently. Damn it. Spider-Man's classic. Doesn't look like there's any changes. I mean, two characters that are really very recognizable and that they don't want. I mean, they're not making any real changes to Wolverine. Doesn't look like they're making any real changes to Captain America, to Spider-Man. I mean, that's wise. So they're just making Hulk look stupid.
Has Wolverine had those yellow stripes on his ribs?
It looks familiar to me. Yeah, it looks familiar to me. I'm not sure it's always been there, but I think a similar design has been there before. It looks like slash.
Similar to his original. Yeah, it's similar to his original.
Yeah, it's a little closer to the original one. Yeah.
I don't think he's had. I actually don't remember if he's had those for a while.
I don't think so. But
and anything else? Anything else to talk about?
No, I think after half the episode, I will say, and that's the news.
Good point. I forgot we hadn't said that yet.
More like two-thirds of the episode there.
So what else is going on? There's the Spider-Man movie. Is it out yet? Is it not out yet? I don't even know because I'm not really paying too heavily attention. What are you guys' what are your feelings or expectations or excitement level or whatever about the new Spider-Man film?
It is out. It's doing boffo box office, about $50 million in its first 3 days.
Okay, that's so good. That's not incredible, but it's good.
It's expected to do about 130 or so by the end of its opening weekend.
Yeah,
130 to 150. So it depends on how many people have already made it out to see it. But if that draws away from the weekend box office or not.
That is very strong, very very strong. What are kind of the reviews on it?
Could be from, more mixed.
Both from one of the reviews, I should say this because I know you would know, the reviews from the comic book community and the more mainstream critics is kind of what I'm curious about.
Well, certainly the comic book community is very split. I mean, if I hear it's fun, I hear the acting's pretty good, but it is a full-on origin film, and a lot of folks kind of had the same reaction I have with Superman movies, where they're telling me things I already know that I don't believe there's anyone in the room that doesn't know them. So why do I have to hear the whole story again? That said, I'm hearing the effects are good. I'm totally torn on whether I want to see it or not. I have not had a lot of excitement going in. I'm off this week, and yet I still haven't made it out to a performance. My wife has declined. She would rather see Avengers again if we're going to go see a comic movie this weekend. So I don't know. I'm not too jazzed. Just given that I don't want, like, you know, if someone had told me that he was in the costume in 10 minutes, that probably would have had me there already. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just expectations that if I'm going to spend another hour and 20 minutes seeing the origin again, I'm not so sure that's where I want to spend my first run money.
I'm just looking up on Metacritic's here, and the critic score is a 42, or sorry, is a 42 critics, and it's a 66 out of 100. So it's kind of sounds like it's a good movie, not great. And the user score, which is 170 people, is 7.5. Now the user scores again, it's much more easy for people to rate it many times if they have a reason to, and you know, that could be a little bit more skewed, but it does give you an idea. What the hell? I'll look it up on Rotten Tomatoes while Brett gives me kind of his feelings about. Are you going to see the movie, Brett? Looking forward to it? What's your thoughts?
I think that the answer to us looking forward to it is in the fact that we haven't gone to see it yet. None of us have.
But I don't really go to any movies.
No. But lately, so the Avengers. I had made a plan to see the Avengers the week that it came out. You know, whether, like, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to see it opening day or in that week, but I had made a plan to see it as soon as I could. And in this case, you know, that plan's just not there. Will I see it? Absolutely I will. Some people that have said that they liked it, and maybe I respect their opinions more, so I go into it with a little more sense of optimism. You know, before I wasn't very optimistic. I happened to loathe the guy who's playing Spider-Man, so it's one of those cases where that's a real, you know, knock against it going in. I hope he's better than I expect.
I don't know. I'm a big Tobey Maguire fan, personally. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to... I mean, if I was to watch the film, that would be why I see it.
I am a big fan of... the guy who's playing Spider-Man as well.
Tobey Maguire.
Actually, yeah, I actually am a fan of Andrew Garfield. So,
what's... Whoa. Something you want to tell me here?
No, I actually don't want to say you... I don't want to catch you up today. For God's sakes, don't tell him what happens in Spider-Man number 3. He needs to enjoy that glory...
Yeah.
Fresh, no spoilers.
Oh, I've seen Spider-Man number 3, and I'm also always look forward to seeing Kirsten Dunst on screen as well. So that'll also be another reason if I do decide to go see it, to go see it. Anyways, just looking at the Amazing Spider-Man on Rotten Tomatoes here, we're seeing 6.7 out of 10 is the average rating, and the write-up, a well-chosen cast and sure-handed direction allow Amazing Spider-Man to thrill despite revisiting many of the same plot points from 2002 Spider-Man. Now, I love the 2002 Spider-Man. Say what you will, I did not like 2. I did not like 3. I like 3 more than 2.
Really?
But I did not like... Yeah. Because I really hated 2. Whereas 3 I just thought was pretty average. I disliked 2. But 1 I loved. I mean, I loved it so much. So there, it's almost like... Other than the fact that the special effects, even in that day, didn't look good, and they certainly look worse now, everything else about that film is nearly picture-perfect for a Spider-Man origin story and original movie. So if I don't think they're going to do it better, that's why I had the attitude of, why would I want to bother? I'll just wait a couple more years till it's fresh and watch that again.
I'm really curious what you didn't like about Spider-Man 2, but I would agree that Sam Raimi's first Spider-Man movie, it was the gold standard for comic movies for a long time. He had his powers 7 minutes into the film. It was an origin story, and he first shows his powers 7 minutes into the movie. That's how you do a comic movie. I don't need, you know, like Ang Lee's Hulk, where you spend half the movie of nonsense and angst before you finally make him turn into the Hulk.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, give him the power. Like, we got it. You can do this in shorthand. Like, tell us who this character is fast, and put him in costume, and let us see who he is in costume. And when he's got, and when he's living with these powers, we don't. I'm not curious who Clark Kent is. I really am not. I don't need a half film where he's hanging around learning about his abilities. We've had it. 7.8 on IMDb. IMDb is usually fairly close for me. though it does tend to skew high in the first week. It'll settle out a bit.
And again, it's easy for those ones are very much more so than critics. It's easy for those ones to be skewed, but for some reason or another, towards being good, especially in the first early going. So
it'll be the people that are most excited, but it's up to about 18,000 votes, so that'll water down anyone who's trying to.
That's true.
But I don't know. I'm now on my third day of finding something better to do when it comes time to actually walk over to the movie theater. I mean, I'm only a 15-minute walk from the movie theater, and I've got nothing happening. And yet, I still haven't made it to the movie.
Well, it's true, but you never have something happening, do you?
I usually have something more happening than that. No, I'm on vacation.
But yeah, so you went from one thing happening to none?
Exactly.
What's going on?
Yeah, I'm reading a lot of comics.
Really? You don't say.
Really starting to catch up. After this 1,000 comics and the next 1,000 comics, I only have 1,000 comics left.
He's reading a lot of comic books, folks.
And meanwhile, the other 1,000 will have piled up in the meantime.
And why is that not in the news? Keith is reading a lot of comic books. Late breaking news. We're going to do an add-on here.
Not as many as Chris.
Wow. No. He's not crazy. But anyways, well, he's not the same kind of crazy. But anyways, yeah, so you know what? I'm not going to tell you why I didn't like Spider-Man 2, only because it sounds to me like in the future we need to do a fanboy film review on the three films. And I don't want to spoil it. Does that make sense? No, or you just want to hear?
No, I'd have to watch the third one again.
Not really.
No, nobody has to watch the third one again.
Just watch, read the Wikipedia page plot summary, and you're good, and we'll go from there.
With the stupidest who killed your parents, you know, I thought the Joker was Joe Chill thing was bad, but
yeah, that was a bad decision. the Sandman killed his dad was bad. It was bad, and I only think the reason why I actually didn't dislike 3 more than 2 was because I had super high expectations for 2. And I saw it about 2 weeks in, and everybody was raving about it. It was better in the first and this and that, and then it disappointed me. Whereas I saw 3 probably after I owned it for a year on home video, your Blu-ray, before finally sticking it in because I kept on hearing how awful it was, and then it wasn't quite that awful. So I think that there is a little bit of that going on. So, expectations. Probably, if I've watched them in order, the three, that I don't think I'd like to, but I think I still love one, not like two, and admit that 3 is the worst movie of them all. But I won't do that, because we're not doing a fanboy film review, according to Keith.
Well, maybe we still will.
There you go. So I'll save what I'm saying, thinking on Spider-Man 2. But I have good arguments.
Chris, of course, will love Spider-Man 3, the dance numbers.
Well, no, actually, that's wrong. Chris will hate Spider-Man 3 and then recommend it.
He'll own several copies, yes.
That's true. That's true. Oh, man. All right, well, what do you guys say? Want to get on to the Wii Views?
I've got one quick anecdote that I want to tell.
Oh, excellent. Tell it.
Slayed me. You know, we often talk about the cynicism of comic fans and what do they really want. We're talking about the Marvel relaunch and how no one wants change, but no one wants it to stay the same either. You always want it to be new, but never change anything. So I was at my office, and I convinced one of my coworkers to try Life with Archie. I had told her the concept. I had told her about the same-sex marriage issue. She was a big fan of the Archie Digests and took them traveling and was very. She came in and was very happy to show me that she had gone out and picked up a copy of the new Life with Archie magazine and was looking forward to taking it camping the same way she used to take the Digest. And we started telling a couple of our coworkers, because she was showing it around, about this concept of two alternate worlds where Archie married Veronica and Archie married Betty. And one of my coworkers got this horrified look on her face and said, "But Archie and Betty are just supposed to sit around eating burgers. They're not supposed to ever, develop or change at all." And I thought, this is wonderful. This is not isolated to comic fans in the least. This is someone horrified that they would change something as fundamental as Betty and Veronica.
You know what? It's true, though. I mean, everybody, I mean, people want what they grew up with because it's what made them comfortable, gave them good memories. They hate the idea of, I don't know if it's that they hate the idea that their memories are ruined, or they hate the idea of somebody else not having those same memories, or what it is, but I think
that's a lot of it. When I think of my son not being able to grow up with certain things that I hold dear, then those are the kind of things that, you know, where it's just like, oh, but wait, you have to know about this. Like, yeah. Saturday morning cartoons. For my son, that's nothing. It means nothing to him.
Cartoons are on all the time now.
Exactly.
Whereas when we were kids, they were on Saturday freaking mornings. And maybe if we're lucky, from 4 to 5 weekdays, you know?
Yeah, and he doesn't know that. And so the concept that he would grow up and think that Spider-Man works as a scientist at this job and does this, and I'm like, but no, he's a student, or, you know, and stuff like that. This is Spider-Man, you know, and it's just, so I think that people do latch onto those concepts, and they don't want to give them up.
All right, let's move on to, it's time to do our next bit. It's the reviews saving you.
Saving you from bad comments. Here I come to
save the day. Excellent. And, guys, Brett, why don't you open it up?
All right. Well, I'm going to open it up with probably one of my favorite books of the week. Actually, I felt like this was a decent week for me, but I'm going to go with the Comixology exclusive Edison Rex number 1. 16 pages of fun comic story that asks the question, what would a supervillain do if the world was in peril and there's no superhero because he already took him out? And I thought this was great. I thought this is kind of like the book that Alan Moore wants to write but keeps overwriting. And to me, it's a ton of fun. It's really short, but the last page, it just totally sold it. And I really want to read this book. I thought it was fun, and the art was solid. Perfect for the book, really. So, you know, high marks for me all around.
See, and I didn't think that the art is, talk about Saturday morning cartoon. It has that feel to it, certainly. Like a Powerpuff Girl type feel to it or something. It's probably well suited for the book, but I didn't think it was particularly good. It's a supervillain who is essentially Lex Luthor, and a superhero who is essentially Superman. And like you say, this time, Lex Luthor... It's difficult to talk about this because I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Well, like I've read a couple of interviews, and they pretty much give away the end concept immediately.
They do? Okay.
Yeah.
Essentially, the idea here is that, like you say, the supervillain, the Lex Luthor character, takes out Superman here, and afterwards has a guilty. Here's this chance to take over the planet, and all of a sudden, within like three panels, he feels guilty and decides instead he should save the planet. In case there's any other issues.
Because he still needs the planet to be around.
Well, yeah, but if he rules it, he can still take care of those things, and he could rule it with an iron fist and take care of those things.
But that's what he's going to do. That's what I think he's going to do. He's still a criminal genius, but he's the protector of Earth.
I see, and I didn't get that concept, Brett, but also I just felt that there was, it just happened so quick. All of a sudden, he's like, man, I feel bad about what I did. I just killed the dude. You know, and in fact, when he's killing him, he's this look on his face of shock, like, man, I killed this my greatest villain with a really lame trick. Like, I didn't have some great. It's like, that's a really lame trick. Dummy fell for it. Like, I don't know, Brett. It was fun, and I'm a little interested to come back and see where it's going to happen. I don't know if they can keep this concept up. I don't know if this can stay fresh and keep this concept up. I don't know, man. I don't. I think the idea that he is the supervillain and he's right, that the superhero really was evil all along, And if they had ran with that, that would have been more interesting than he actually killed him and now he's like, man, that's what an asshole I am. I better go save the world to make up for it. I think that would have been a better concept. Keith, tiebreaker, right down the middle.
I like the story. It wasn't much for the art. I kind of did enjoy the story. I've seen a couple of versions like this. It is a little rarer, but there was the great Empire miniseries, for example, that played with the idea of what happens if you actually do take over the world. I love the way Empire handled it. Of, you know, it's just a lot of paperwork. the complexity of actually running the world is not at all
exciting. I have not read that. Where's that from? Who did that?
That's Mark Waid and Barry Kitson. It was DC. It's a great miniseries.
And how long ago did it come out?
About 04, I think it was. Three or four. So
that,
I wasn't
one
much
other
for
question.
The
I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off. I'm just curious. One other question: is it within continuity? Is it like an Elseworlds type story? What is it?
No, it's just it's,
it doesn't feature familiar characters.
Neither.
It's
no,
okay.
It's all new characters.
Okay, sounds good.
So this Edison Rex is from Chris Roberson, who quite infamously a couple of months ago when his book was ending, iZombie was announced that it was ending, very publicly quit DC, in part over before Watchmen. And so this is Monkey Brain Comics, which is all digital first and 99-cent books, which is why the page count is a little bit lower than the usual. It's 16 pages, I believe, in this, 16. So it's a decent-sized read. I mean, for 99 cents, it's a good read. Like I said, it wasn't much for the art. The art is very, very open, perhaps to make it more tablet-friendly, easy to read on a smaller tablet. So I like the story. I don't know if I continue just because the art didn't wow me, though. It was a bit cartoony, a bit simple for my taste. The story was a little predictable. So, I don't know, I felt kind of like a zero issue, like it a little too establishing, no draw to bring me back for a second issue.
You know, I do want to say, even though I won't really say I'll continue with it, and I wouldn't say, though, that somebody wouldn't enjoy it, that it isn't something somebody should give a chance to for 99 cents. I'm not sure. I think it was actually Chris who suggested we read it, and now he's not here this week. But I want to thank him for suggesting we do it and supporting the book from Comixology. I don't think that's a... It's make up your own mind, folks. Give it a shot.
Yeah, 99 cents, you can't really go that wrong.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about a book where the art was certainly not simple. Let's talk about, how do you say it, Ozymandias? Brett, help me out here.
Ozymandias?
That's the one. Ozymandias. So I'm just gonna throw mine out there that I did not read it. I did pick it up and consider it. I flipped through it. The art is beautiful. Jay Lee is one of my all-time favorites. I wouldn't say he's one of the best ever, because in order to be one of the best ever, he'd have to be able to do this quality art at a more, at a faster basis, I think.
More than one book a year, yeah.
Yeah, basically. And that's why I wouldn't say he's one of the best ever, but he's one of my favorites ever. Certainly one of my top three, top five in that range. But the art's beautiful. But this looked like, I think I was turned off because it's not a character I'm overly interested in. Not so much because of Before Watchmen. It's just not a character I'm overly interested in. And it looked like it was extremely text heavy. And I knew I'd likely be reading it really late at night and just couldn't feel the love there. But Keith, what do you think of it?
It is text heavy, but I never felt like it was that it was telling instead of showing. There's a lot happens in this book, and the narration is all first person of him basically telling his own origin story, telling his activities, what's going on in his head, as opposed to purely what's happening on the panel. So it doesn't feel repetitious the way, you know, we were talking about Superman. It is text-heavy in the same way that a book is text-heavy. There's a lot unpacked in this, and, you know, there's enough content that it could have been a four-issue just in what the content that's in this one issue. Same thing I had said about Night Owl, that really they could have unpacked that further and made it the whole story. I really like this. I like the art. I like the style. I like the flow of the book. I'm interested on where they're going. They establish some kind of film noir elements. really playing with a few different genres here, and it's a very different feel than the other Before Watchmen's too, which is kind of cool. I was expecting all of them to go so dark and, you know, hard boiled, and that's not where they've gone. They've all got very independent voices. So
perhaps it's not that because the writer is a writer who's been writing since the 70s. Perhaps that's why it's not that grim, gritty, more modern feel. Is that what you're saying? Is not really the feel you're getting from it.
Certainly, the stuff I've enjoyed from Len Wein of, you know, in recent years.
Either Wiener or Weiner.
That's right.
Either way, you're not really winning. You're Wiener or Weiner. Anyways, go ahead.
Let's just call him Len Wein then.
Let's just call him Len.
So, I mean, the last thing of his that I really liked was Legacies. So I think that nostalgic feel works for him because he has been writing for, you know, close to 40 years. So, yeah, I like this. It's, I'd say, next to Night Owl, my favorite of the Before Watchmen so far.
Herb, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I'm right along with Keith. This is definitely my second favorite of the Before Watchmen that have come out so far. Another one that definitely makes me feel better about it. You know, it's not just one series that I think is excellent now. It's two. And the fact that there's a lot of text absolutely didn't bother me. I had no problem reading it. I read it in actually a very similar amount of time as I would read a book with less text, just because it really flowed well. It just, the story was really engaging. And I think that he did a great job of telling the story as that character. You know, it's really well done for me in that regard.
Now, I have a couple questions. One of them is that this character, Ozymandias, I'm going to mispronounce it again, Brett.
Ozymandias?
Adrian
Veidt? Or Veidt, yeah.
Plays an incredibly pivotal role in Watchmen. And if you're telling his... And one of the things that makes him intriguing in Watchmen is you don't ever quite understand him. He's the hardest to get and get close to. And there's a distance to him, which is part of the character. And it sounds to me like if you're doing an origin story, it could A, ruin that, and B, maybe give away some of the more interesting aspects that end up happening in Watchmen. How are they balancing that, Brett?
To me, the truth, it's like they are explaining the things from his past, and they're really going in depth with it. But to me, what's really happening is that he's maintaining the aloofness that he showed in Watchmen throughout this because of the fact that he's narrating his origin. So you still have that same character feel, even though they're illustrating his past. And I don't have a problem with that.
Because if you don't have that distance from this character, and I think that's one of the reasons I was worried about reading it. If you don't have that distance, though obviously I've read Watchmen now, so obviously I know everything that happens with all the characters, but if you don't have that distance from it, I don't know if that book is as successful for a new reader if they read this first. That's one of my worries.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. At the end of this book, there is no way that you're going to come out and say, man, I can really associate with that Ozymandias guy. You're not going to come out and say that.
But do you think, what about you, Keith? Do you think there's any chance that somebody's going to read this and be able to understand some of the twists that character takes or predict some of the twists that character takes in Watchmen they might not see coming otherwise?
I'm of two minds. One, I'd say no. I'd say what happens in Watchmen, you know, is twist and turn enough as it is. But I don't know that it's important. I honestly don't. I don't know who the target, who the very small percentage is that in 5 years is going to start with Before Watchmen and not have read Watchmen or have encountered it before.
But that's exactly it. Today, maybe that's the case. There are some people who are reading Before Watchmen today who came out, who read Ozymandias this week, who have not read Watchmen yet. I guarantee you.
I would love to get an email from one of them.
Well, there's not many. I'm not saying there's many, but there's
that
some.
Haven't, that picked up before Watchmen and had not have watched the film and had not read Watchmen. I'm very curious to know who that
is. Perhaps I think watching the film might, because a film is more accessible. But there are certainly some who are, I guarantee you there's got to be somebody out there. There has to be. But more than that, I think 5, 10, 20 years from now, not knowing the order or the way to do it, it may happen more and more. So that's like I say, I think of all the characters that's important to remain unfamiliar with for the main story, he's the character that most falls under that category. Maybe comedian number 2, and then Dr. Manhattan. I don't know. Maybe I'm off on this, but
I guess that's the Darth Vader problem, though. I mean, we have talked about that before. But one of the dangers of before Watchmen is that you cannot help once you've read them. Once read, they cannot be unread. It will affect the way you see certain things in the original book. In the same way that when you watch Star Wars 4 through 6, Darth Vader is a different character for you now because of what you saw in 1 to 3. And whether you never watch 1 to 3 again, it's still there. It's still, you can't unsee them. It is a different story or a different perspective you are bringing to that story. The story hasn't changed, of course, but the perspective you have does. So, yeah, it is. I honestly still don't know how much people are going to start with Before Watchmen as the place to begin to explore these characters. I guess we'll see.
Like I said, I think we'll see in 10 years, exactly. Well, in 10 years, when we're on episode 5,000, 500, whatever it'll be, we'll talk about it again. Brett, write that down, that in 10 years we're going to revisit this on episode 480 or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
Thanks. Keith, why don't we move on to the next book?
Well, let's talk about He-Man, Masters of the Universe. What's the full title? Is it He-Man, Masters of the Universe?
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, yes.
And the Masters of the Universe?
I believe, yes.
All right. Well, this is by a little guy, just a fresh face comic creator named James Robinson.
I see a future.
May have encountered his work before. Art by Philip Tan. And I actually didn't even know Philip Tan's name, barely noticed his work. Stand at the comic store the other day with Brett, and there was a guy next to me, picks up He-Man, and says, "Oh, He-Man, James Robinson. Maybe I should get this." "Oh, it's Philip Tan. Well, you know, guys, me, Philip Tan." And he puts it back on the shelf without having flipped it open. And I'm like, Philip Tan's done like 12 books. Like, how could you possibly have developed that much ire for this guy that you couldn't even open the cover? I was very, very confused. I really enjoyed this book. I was hopeful because it was James Robinson, but I really, really liked it. It was like a fairy tale. I really dug the style. I really enjoyed Philip Tan's work, and I like the way that they played out the story. I like the way they introduced a couple of other characters. Very similar, actually, in style to the way he's been doing Earth 2, with just playing out a little bit of, introduce one big character, a bit of a second character, and like a tease of a third, staggering it like that. I expect to see that over a couple of issues. I really liked it. I'm surprised to say that He-Man will be on my pull list for next month.
I'm surprised by that too. That's cool. Brett, what do you think?
I think the main thing that I liked about this book, and I did go in with a bunch of fear, because James Robinson wrote my least favorite comic of the year so far in that Vandal Savage DC Universe Presents, which I thought was horrible. And so I was just thinking, is this a paycheck book? But after I read this, I was just like, this is a serious take on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe that keeps the fun element that you remember as a kid, dumps some of the cheesy, and gives you the nostalgia, but gives you a really good story to go along with it. Absolutely another fine... This is a really good comic book. And yeah, I'm as surprised as Keith, and I'm totally there for it. 6 issues that I really want to read.
You know what? I'm I'm not as strong in it as you two. He-Man's like my action figure as a kid. I love He-Man. He-Man's not as cool as G.I. Joe or Transformers. It doesn't transform, for instance. it's like superheroes in another world. It's Kirby-esque in some ways, though. I've always been a big fan. This book, see, it's really, and this was a book when I first heard DC was doing it, I thought it's better served at, you know, Dynamite or something like that. But, I mean, they did do a good job. They got Philip Tan, who I don't dislike. I've read him and seen his work on Batman and Robin with Grant Morrison, and I liked his art, and I like it here. And James Robinson, obviously, is a very good writer whose majority of his work I've really appreciated. And he does a good job here. And this is a really difficult book, and Brett summed it up to some degree, because you say it brought the nostalgia and yet made a fresh take on it. But that's the thing. There's not a lot of backstory to He-Man. On the other hand, you can't ignore what backstory there is. You know? You have to make it accessible for everybody. On the other hand, you don't want to make it too kids-like. Yeah, there's just a lot of elements that you're trying to balance, and I think they did a good job with it. My problem is, at the end, I feel like the best you can do with a book like this is make it good. It's impossible to satisfy everything you need to satisfy with this and make it great. I think the best you can do is make a good book. And I don't know that I want to read a good book. I want to read great books. And so I'm kind of on the fence of whether or not I'll be back to it. But it's a good effort regardless. Brett, why don't you go on to the next book?
All right, Man-Thing. The finally getting printed final Steve Gerber storyline for Man-Thing. And the thing that I did like about this, I like the fact, because as I was reading it, it referenced his original story that this is kind of a sequel to from the Man-Thing series. And so I was reading it, and I was just like, man, I really would like to go back and read this story that happened. And then halfway through the book, I'm like, oh, there it is. It's printed right here for me. And so I like the fact that I actually almost wish that they'd flipped it, because
that's the problem, Brett. You just nailed the problem. We needed to read the other part first, and they didn't have to necessarily flip it, but they should have told us it's there.
Yeah. It was almost one of those cases where like afterwards I was reading it and I'm like, oh yeah. And then the biggest problem with it is that it's cut off. So they're telling it over the same amount of issues, the three issues.
Which is why they couldn't flip it, I guess.
Yeah. And so it's odd in that regard. But at the same time, I liked the story quite a bit. I thought it was very interesting. And I'm not sure I agreed with Kevin Nolan's choice for the painted art. It didn't necessarily completely work for me. And I feel like this is probably one of those, I'm not going to read 2 and 3 as they come out. I would really rather just have it all bundled and go and read the first story and then read the second story and see how it stands up at that point. But I do like it, and I will eventually read it.
It needs a trade paperback version, certainly, where you can do it the right way. That'd be preferable, I think, even just to a 3-issue miniseries. I think a trade paperback version. Who was it that wrote the foreword to this? Was it Macchio? What's his name?
It was Ralph Macchio.
Oh, it was Ralph Macchio.
Was it Ralph Macchio? Okay. Ralph Macchio. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange because he talks about the book, he talks about Gerber, and he talks about how Nolan spent basically years drawing this book. And then you open it up in the first page, and it's like a cartoony, it's painted, but it's like this cartoony, almost no detail version of Man-Thing, almost called the Swamp Thing there. But it's totally caught me off guard. I'm like, what? This took years? There's like no detail. It's like a cartoony, no detail. It's like something, like if they did a, it is like the Swamp Thing version of the cartoon in the early 90s. Like it's a, you know, once I got past that, though, the art is really quite good. It's just it doesn't feel like it fits, but it is well done. This is some really good. Like I'm confused by the book. There's some really good dialogue. The characters are complex. I appreciate what they're doing. When you have a book, though, that's really good but really weird, it's tough to tell if the weird or the quality is winning. I can't decide if the quality is overshadowing the weird or the weird is overshadowing the quality. So again, it's another book where I may pick it up in a trade paperback form, but I don't know. It's an extremely odd book. Keith, what are your thinks? What are your thinks? What are your thinks? What the hell is that?
I actually had the opposite experience from Brett. I kind of wish I hadn't read that part of the story at the end. I everything I needed to know about these characters was in there, and you know, the couple of offhand references to "you knew me when I wore leotards," I was actually fine not having ever read that story. And going back, it just naturally made me compare the two. And I actually would have rather not. I like the art. Sometimes the cartoony gets a bit overwhelming for me. You know, the multicolored stars when someone runs into a wall or something like that. It's a bit too cartoony for me. When it's the beautiful stuff at the very first couple of pages, when it looks almost like John Muth, I really enjoyed. I like the story. I liked the humans that they introduced. I've never been a Man-Thing fan at all, aside from that short horror run that was done in the 90s.
The Mateus and Liam Sharp?
Yeah, that one. That's
that was awesome.
The only Man-Thing I've ever liked.
Yeah.
I never really got the concept of the character.
Well, that's because that series focused on Man-Thing not at all. And this didn't either.
Yeah, I mean, Man-Thing's never been the protagonist in his own stories.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of the oddities of the character. So I don't know. I'm really kind of... I've gone back and forth on whether to give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and I think it kind of just happened. I don't know if I have anything to drive me to look at the other two. I mean, the art was kind of nice, though. I think I'd second that. I would rather have just had this as like a 64-page bookshelf format instead of a miniseries or something.
Is that all the books this week?
That's it.
Awesome. Let's go out with the plugs, Brett.
Let's to start out. That's Brett, Brett, at WeTalkPodcast.com. Brett_WeTalk on Twitter. And anyways, I'll just mention my Comicosity reviews. In this case, I wrote reviews on Edison Rex, and I've got He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. So otherwise, I will talk about our good buddy Comic Canuck and comicbooktherapy.com, so go visit them, and go visit WeTalkPodcast.com, because man, do we have a bunch of content right now. It is amazing how much stuff we got coming out.
That's true, and you know what? That Comicosity, I just discovered them. They're awesome. They're wicked. Keith?
You can email me, keith@wetalkpodcasts.com. You can follow me on Twitter, CubReporterK. And because I'm on vacation, I'm actually knocking off things that were on my writing list. So I've got my new post on Comicosity, my Read Between the Lines column, which is about Sam MacGuffin. Sometimes a character is just a plot device. And I've got a new post on the WeTalk Podcasts website, Lucian's Pull List, part one of at least three of comic stories that never were. Mo?
Well, again, I'm Mo, M-O, at WeTalkPodcast.com, or Mo_WeTalk, no E on my name. I'm not going to screw up my... I was going to screw up my email and such as a joke to Chris again, but we already did that. We're also can be found the feed to us, and there's a bunch of good people doing comic book podcasts over at the Comic Podcast Network, who we're affiliated with. So check them out too. And someday we'll actually get ourselves up there as soon as I figure out how to properly format it, or Brett does, one of us. So we'll get up there too at some point. But they have some really cool stuff. Stash My Comics is another site. If you listen to the Long Box Graveyard, we're going to have some affiliation for the next month, starting probably next week, hopefully next week, with those guys as well. And they got some really, really cool stuff, some blogs and articles, and some other really neat features that makes them unique. So you definitely want to check that out too. And other than that, if you do want to write a blog for us, a guest blog, or even start a podcast, a regular, ongoing, monthly weekly, whatever you want to do, as long as it's a regular schedule. If you're interested, again, that's something you can email or Twitter me about. We have added Joe Mulvey. We've added Lombox Graveyard. We've got some guest wrestling blogs that are up that we did, but nothing comic book related. So hopefully somebody will get in touch with us there, and we'll have some fun. So other than that, I don't think there's anything else. Did I forget anything, gentlemen? Nothing? Or OUT?